Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. Billions of people around the world use social media daily. It's hard to remember what life looked like before the internet, smartphones, automated this, automated that. The use of technology has certainly made life more convenient for most people around the world. But did you ever stop to think about how that technology is using you? Even worse, how governments are using that technology on you. This week, we'll look into the overlap of big tech and politics all around the world. All right, let's get into the MO. Technology is all around you. You're watching this right now because of big tech. But the industry is not as fun and virtuous as it likes to present itself. The same people who make it so you can laugh at cat videos, share your baby's first steps, or your hottest dance moves are also the same people who shape political narratives at the behest of governments. In effect, big tech shapes how you see the world and helps the government see you. Joining us to discuss all of this is Chris Garafa, co-host of the Covert Action Bulletin podcast and technology writer. Chris, thank you for being with us. First, Chris, let's look at the big picture here. What's your take on the role of big tech in politics, both domestically and abroad?
Just like any big business, you know, big tech has a huge role in U.S. and global politics. And of course, the U.S. has a giant role in global politics as well. I would say it's outsized, as I think as we all know. But the role of big tech is very unique in a sense that many of these platforms actually play the role of information sharing. They tell us what information we're allowed to see. They share, you know, information with us. They collect the news like Google News or a stream like that, or they allow us to publish on them, but then they determine what's publishable and what's not. So of course we have seen platforms like YouTube and Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, and so many others take down media that they don't care about. And of course that influences the role of public discourse when it comes to national, international politics on every level. There's also a significant amount of money that flows from the big tech companies, the communication companies, and I think there's a giant connection here between them as well when we look at it, because they want to have that influence. And on the other side, they want to maintain and stay in the good graces of, you know, the U.S. and the Western governments in particular. They really want to be able to do the bidding of those governments so that they are also able to get away with all of the interference in political discourse and discussion that they do, as well as the surveillance, the nonstop monitoring and constant, you know, working together with these surveillance states that they have. So there's the money aspect, certainly, but there's also the political aspect in terms of what they allow us to say. I mean, even now, we are facing, you know, a bit of a crisis on a place like Twitter, where voices are, you know, being silenced who are critical of the service. But that is nothing new. It has been happening for, you know, many, many years. And it's really ramped up, of course, since 2015, 2016, when, you know, in the U.S., the Democratic Party couldn't admit that they lost the election to Donald Trump. They had to blame, you know, so-called Russian interference. I remember at first Facebook actually said, you know, there was no such thing as Russian interference, but they were quickly called to task by Congress and fell in line. Zuckerberg himself fell in line about a year later and said, yes, in fact, there was this Russian interference, so to say. And of course, there was no proof of that. And it's actually never been proven to this day. So as a result of that, big tech now, you know, says, you know, either they label you and say you are Chinese state affiliated or Russian state affiliated or what have you, or they just straight up just block you. They don't allow you to be posted, or they shadow ban you, which in some ways is actually even the worst, because you believe you are posting to an audience, but in fact you're not. You're posting into the ether, and no one or very few people are actually seeing you. So the role that big tech has played in the political discourse cannot be overstated, because this is how we have discussion. This is how people across the world, billions of people, across the world actually learn about and talk about and have conversations and just engage with politics around the world, whether it's locally in their hometown or, you know, some an international issue.
At the turn of the millennium, Facebook was in its infancy. There was very little government oversight. It was almost shrugged off by politicians around the world as sort of a fad. Today, it's believed Facebook has shaped not only political outcomes, but society writ large. What's your read on Facebook?
Facebook, you know, remains the one of, if not the largest social media platforms around the world, and that is intentional for Mark Zuckerberg. They have continued to change the way Facebook kind of works. It's the same basic idea. You connect with your friends, you like or follow pages that you want to engage with, whether it's, you know, a brand, a politician, a band you like, or just a funny, you know, meme page. But behind all of that, you know, Facebook has really spent its time over the last, particularly the last 10 years, and really the last six to seven, trying to reshape its own image because of the scrutiny that it's come under. There was the Cambridge Analytica scandal, which we learned that Facebook was just handing over data to a private company with no recourse, really no recourse for Facebook. There was, of course, the NSA, the PRISM revelations from Edward Snowden, where we learned that Facebook, among all of the other companies, also were handing off information to the NSA and just saying, here's basically free rein to our entire database and everything that everyone's posting. But there's also the role that Facebook plays in terms of the day-to-day content moderation. And this isn't just the moderation of, you know, stuff that should be moderated, illegal, you know, content, things like that. But this is the moderation of political thought. That is the real issue. A number of years ago, Facebook did an experiment that they didn't tell anyone about it. They showed on election day in the US a banner at the top that said, did you vote today? And for some people, they just showed, you know, did you vote today? So many of your friends, they gave a number, voted. And for some other people, they actually showed the names and images of some of your friends who had said on Facebook that they had gone to vote. And they used that as an experiment to see if people who saw the names and images of their friends were more likely to actually go vote. But they didn't explain this. They didn't tell anyone about this until much, much later. It was years later when we found out about this experiment. So that is a huge impact, potentially, you know, on a national election in 2012 that Facebook did not discuss and decided on its own unilaterally to just go ahead and do. Who knows how many people would have voted if they saw a reminder with their friends, and the results were that more people did if they saw the pictures. There's also the question, I think, of whether or not, you know, Facebook moderation itself is dangerous. With the recent announcement of, you know, Trump's 2024 campaign, Facebook actually had to put out an internal memo that was quickly leaked saying, you know, we cannot fact check Donald Trump like we have not fact checked other politicians. But I think that's really hiding the actual issue, is that it's not just about the politicians that get fact checked. It's about the alternative news media that also gets so-called fact-checked. I've posted things myself, either that I have written or that I have verified or trusted or come from trusted sources that are real. And Facebook just puts a label on them that says this has been, you know, proven false, when the so-called correction article is actually a piece of, you know, in some instances, NATO propaganda. So I think we also need to look at where Facebook is going with the metaverse. Zuckerberg has gone all in on this concept of the metaverse, and so far it's not doing that well. Even internally at Facebook, the development of this platform, this experience, I guess they want to call it, is not looking that good, both from a technical standpoint, but also from a standpoint of how do we, the people who make these services, and we make them by engaging in them, by giving them content and by using them, how do we benefit from the metaverse? And that has yet to be seen. But what we do know is that they will be monetizing and they will also be tracking. They're going to be, you know, able to, if you have a headset on, do all sorts of tracking with your eyes and your brain scans and all of those kinds of things that are going to be extremely invasive to the average person who is using that just to get some entertainment. So I think we need to, you know, keep an eye on Facebook, especially as we go into 2024, as the metaverse becomes more and more of a reality. And it seems like Zuckerberg is willing to just continue to spend billions and billions of dollars on it. So that's really where they're going. My read ultimately on them is that they will do anything to A, make money, and B, play their role in controlling the global discourse around politics, around health, and around every other issue that impacts us.
20 years or so now into the social media revolution, there's finally some scrutiny into the role of big tech, whether it's the discussion of Section 230 or bots or governments using these platforms for sometimes nefarious purposes. What are the politicians missing in terms of regulation of these platforms? Or should there be any regulation at all?
Well, it depends on whose perspective you're looking at. I think for themselves, politicians aren't missing anything because it is in their interest to actually to have this kind of moderation, to have this kind of incorrect oversight, I would say. You know, both parties actually agree generally with repealing or significantly modifying Section 230. And what 230 does is it simply says that a platform cannot be held responsible for the content that its users post on it, as long as that platform takes steps to remove, you know, outwardly illegal material. And so that's actually a good thing. You don't want, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or the blog that your neighbor runs about your city, you don't want that platform owner to have to be able to sit there and moderate each piece of content, every single post. Because while the larger platforms might be able to swing that kind of work, it's going to actually drive out of business the smaller forums, the smaller apps and websites, and also causes a major issue when you consider what that moderation is going to have to look like. Can somebody sue Facebook, for example, if another user posts something about the first person? That gets us into some very dangerous territory when we're thinking about that. So when we're looking, I think, at, you know, the terms of regulation of these platforms, there absolutely needs to be regulation of these platforms, but it's not the way the politicians are looking at it. It needs to be in terms of who, again, who is using these platforms, right? If none of us were on Facebook or on Twitter or Instagram or Reddit, any of these apps, then they couldn't exist, right? They rely on the fact that we are engaging with these platforms as a means to discuss things with other people, to share pictures, to get news, to offer opinions and get advice, to just really live socially, economically, and politically, not to mention, you know, people who do work on these platforms. The regulation needs to not be coming from the politicians as they exist today, but from careful, considered discussion with the people who are the most affected by these platforms. It's not, you know, somebody sitting in, you know, Facebook or at Meta now and saying, here's the way that we're going to do things. It should actually be a conversation globally, ultimately, because these are global networks, with all of the people who use them saying, here's how we, the people who make these platforms, who make you the money that you get off of these platforms, here's how these things should be run.
All right, Chris Garaffa, don't go anywhere. There's lots more to unpack. Coming up next, we'll talk to Chris about how governments use big tech against other hostile governments by manipulating its own civilians. We'll discuss it when we return. Sit tight. The MO will be right back.
Counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Русофобия оказалась выгодным бизнесом.
Они Украину предали, ограбили и отдали на растерзание американцам. Украину, мою родину.
Эти люди готовились достаточно открыто, финансирование проводилось достаточно широко, и мы знаем всех акторов, кто это финансирование получал.
8 лет двигались ровно в этом направлении, чтобы вот расчеловечить русских и разорвать всякие все связи.
Это результат серьезной работы над историческим сознанием.
Преступление против человечества задокументированных на украинских территориях очень много. И большая часть из них совершена при попустительстве или по прямому приказу нынешнего или прошлого киевского руководства.
Уже они давно вышли из легального поля, давно, значит, действуют другими методами, неконституционными.
Это и есть преступление по нацистскому образцу.
Welcome back to The MO. Chris Garofa was kind enough to shed some more light into this subject for us. So, Chris, recently, the very sad story of the young woman in Iran who died while in morality police custody, Mahsa Amini. There are allegations of CIA trolls or bots used to incite the Iranian population for a mass uprising. Maybe some would compare to the Arab Spring more than a decade ago. Do tech and social media companies have an obligation to suss out government accounts? And is there even any way to do so?
Well, let's start with the second question. Is there a way to do it? There are ways to identify bot accounts. There are ways to identify accounts that are behaving strangely. Did they just start posting and only post about one thing? Might be a bot. Is it a bunch of accounts registered from, you know, the same location in the same few minutes? Might be a network of bots, for sure. There's a lot of different ways, and there has been a lot of really good research done into how to identify those. You know, I'm thinking about Elon Musk right now and how he, since he took over Twitter, he said, you know, we're going to make sure we get rid of the bots, and they're going to do that partially through, you know, verification and forcing people to buy the blue check mark. And I think none of that is actually going to work. I think that's just all show, you know, for Musk. But the question of bots and also trolls is a very real one. We saw how quickly misinformation can spread. Just recently, there was a story that Iran was going to execute 15,000 people who were, you know, arrested as part of the protests. And it turns out that story was completely false and actually came from a CIA-funded organization. And so, you know, it was not real at all. But, you know, Peter Frampton, of all people, the musician, picked it up and shared it, and it spread like wildfire from there. And some of the people spreading it were, you know, certainly accounts that have been just posting anti-Iran propaganda. And some of the people who posted it and picked it up were people who mean well, who actually, you know, who care about women in Iran, but saw this story, did not fact check it, did not look at where the source was, and just ran with it because it was so scandalous. And I think that's part of the problem when it comes to social media, is that we have to look at, you know, where are these things coming from? It doesn't take much for a small network of bots or trolls to plant a story to catch the, you know, the attention of the right person, somebody with a large trusted following, who will then, you know, spread it. They don't have to be the sources themselves. Just like, you know, in the past, the CIA, if we go back, you know, 50, 60 years, the CIA openly, agents, you know, now will say openly that they were feeding information to journalists. It's very similar, except now you don't have to have a face to do it. You can just use a fake picture on a fake account that you just signed up for and just continue pushing your hashtag or your image or whatever it is you have until somebody picks it up.
Over in Ukraine, many months back, Elon Musk gave the Kiev leadership Starlink satellite internet service free of charge. Now, This was used not only by civilians for normal everyday purposes, but mostly this gift was used by military forces for their satellite imagery and so forth to continue that war. But after a few months of this, Elon Musk went to the Biden administration and said, hey, this free trial period is over. I need to get paid for these services. I'm running a business here. U.S. government, pay me. Now, he got a lot of flack over that. But he said he effectively gave away more than $100 million worth of equipment. Is this a prime example of private business, and in this case, big tech, interfering in global affairs or political wars? I mean, how do you view it?
Well, if we start with just how to view the specific Elon Musk incident, you know, we can't take the man, I guess, out of the context of that. You know, he wants the attention. He wants to say that he's done something good. This is not the first time, and I'm sure it won't be the last, that he has sought that kind of attention for himself. I mean, the $44 billion purchase of Twitter, you know, is certainly another example of that. But when we're looking at what he did, you know, basically providing this equipment, I mean, you can't just say we're going to give this equipment and hand it over and here's $100 million worth of stuff. Go figure out how to use it. There's also got to be training. There's got to be integration. So I would actually estimate that the value of the equipment and training was significantly higher because, you can't just say, here's a bunch of, you know, satellites, go use them, Ukrainian military. That's technically not really feasible, and also security risk unless you have a really good understanding of what you're actually doing with that technology. And yes, they were using it for civilians, right? They were letting civilians access the internet and share things through the Starlink satellites. But Musk pulled one of his, you know, grand, you know, okay, time's up. I'm losing money on this now. Give me more attention and also money roll, you know, moves on that to the US government. And he did get panned for that. But he also got a lot of attention, which for him is something that he does want. But I think we need to look at where the, you know, how else big tech interferes in and engages in global affairs. You know, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Oracle, many other companies offer cloud services to the Department of Defense, to the Pentagon, to Customs and Border Protection, to Homeland Security, and others. And just by the nature of building these services and offering them, they're actually intervening in affairs by saying to the government, we can help you, for example, track undocumented people more quickly in the US. And that is one of the things that Palantir, which is a very large tech company, does. They provide that service to Homeland Security. And in fact, they use Amazon's AWS platform as part of that process. There's, you know, Google Cloud has, you know, similar offerings. And there's, you know, many large companies who offer that, but also a lot of the smaller companies ultimately use the services of the big tech companies, right? So an analytics software might use Amazon or Google Cloud offerings as part of their own services. And so Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Oracle, you know, the big platform giants, right? They end up making a ton of money either directly or indirectly from this. So it's actually within their interest to encourage or to incite global conflict up into and including war. And that's no different than big business has ever been throughout history. You know, wars are for territory, wars are for control, wars are for resources and political conquest. And big tech is absolutely no different with that.
The recent U.S. midterm elections broke records in the way of spending. $16.7 billion, a lot of that just in ad spend. Now, just to highlight a few of these hotly contested races, the one in Georgia between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker, that saw the incumbent Democrat Warnock with a whopping $40,000 a month on average on just social media spend. There were times his campaign hit well over $100,000 a month on social media. These numbers were actually fairly common across federal and local elections. Is this kind of spending worth it? I mean, is it justified?
Well, I think those are two very, very different questions. I think, you know, is it worth it? Well, if they win, it's worth it for them. If they get their message out, it's worth it for them. You know, Obama was really one of the first national candidates to, you know, really use the influence of the internet, to use advertising, to use social media as part of his campaign. And, you know, he did a really good job of it, frankly. He learned, he had a good young team who was able to take advantage of social media and also, yes, spend a lot of money on Facebook ad buys. We also, you know, we see this now in really every election, local and, you know, state and national in the U.S. And I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon unless there's a drastic change in terms of how the platforms are operating and how the platforms are actually, you know, engaging in shaping the debate, right? Just like the people are spending on TV, candidates spend on TV, radio, billboards, now, you know, robocalls and text messages, they're looking for any outlet. And if people's attention is primarily on social media, if their attention is on their feed rather than on the evening news on their TV, then more money is going to be spent there. But again, it gets into the question of what other content is then going to show up next to that candidate's ad. And this is where a big issue always comes in. We saw, you know, a number of years ago when the social media, social networking forum site Reddit really became more corporate. They were purchased by Condé Nast. They started to ban a number of their forums called subreddits. And some of them were, you know, extremely disgusting, you know, awful content. But their justification wasn't, this is awful content. Their justification was, our advertisers don't want to be associated with this. And so if somebody is buying political ads or just any kind of business ad, and they're spending millions of dollars over the course of an election or a year, and they say, I don't want to see ads for RT, for example. I don't want to see ads for Covert Action Magazine, for whatever it is. Then who's going, you know, who's going to win out? A smaller outlet with a smaller budget to spend, or the candidate or politician who's actually going to end up being, you know, potentially in control of regulating that platform? I think the answer is very clear. It's going to end up being the candidate, the business, the politician.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.